Let's take a trip down memory lane. It's time for Niagara County's Great History Show.
Oh, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Eric.
All right. Welcome to the Great History Show. I love that. All right. Today is April 12th. It's a Wednesday, and we are joined in studio this morning with our new executive director, Michelle Harris. Good morning, Michelle. Welcome again.
Good morning, and welcome to our audience and everybody in Lockport. I hope everybody's having a wonderful morning. Beautiful weather, so we're all happy about that.
Oh, for sure. I'd also like to welcome Anne-Marie Lindeberry. Hello. Welcome back.
Okay. Good morning, everyone.
And we have a special guest with us this morning, Michelle Kratz, right?
Yep.
Okay, Michelle, you have quite an impressive resume here. You are the Adult Services Librarian in the Lewiston Public Library System, the Outreach Coordinator for the Lewiston Council of Arts. You're a historian for the City of Niagara Falls, and you've written several books.
Yes.
Wow. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone.
Yes. So we're going to have quite an interesting show this morning. And we do encourage you, once we get going, to call in and share with your memories and maybe share some of your knowledge with us at 433-1433. You're more than welcome to give us a call. Let's see. Michelle Harris, you want to kick things off?
Yes. The first thing I want to do, first and foremost, is share some exciting news about our 18th annual Key to the Locks Award. That award is going to be presented to Charlie Begley on May 20th at 10 a.m. at the Discovery Center at 24 Church Street here in Lockport. Charlie is a volunteer at the Lockport Lockport Locks Heritage District, and is a step back in time player for the Niagara History Center. He organizes the John and Diane Copeless series for the Lockport Public Library and has served on both the library board and the History Center board. He's been a beloved teacher at Lockport High School and Niagara University, and so we're really excited to see him get this recognition on May 20th, and we hope that that's a program that is open to the public, and we hope you all can attend that for to see him win that award. So I wanted just to share a few things that are going on at the History Center. On April 27th, we'll be presenting a program on the history of Fisher-Price Toys. Larry Lackner, who worked for Fisher-Price in Medina from 1971 to 1996, will tell the story of the company's founding and demonstrate how early wood and metal toys were built for generations of play. Again, that program is Thursday, April 27th at 2 p.m. It's free and open to the public, and I hope all can attend. I know a lot of people don't even know that Fisher-Price was located here in the area, so I think that's going to be interesting, and he's going to be able to share a lot of new information to people. On May 18th, we're having a program called Policing the Erie Canal, and that's going to be head up by Lieutenant and Historian Jonathan Anderson. At 2 p.m. at the Niagara History Center, he's going to present a program on the policing of the canal, and he will look at urban versus rural canal districts, the juvenile canal boys, and the Sabbatarian movement, and the Underground Railroad, and canal laws and the development of law enforcement during the canal era. So that's going to be a very interesting, unique program as well. And we also want to encourage people to still, we've got some spaces available for our annual road rally, which is going to be June 3rd. It's a fundraiser that we've had, and we had to unfortunately cancel last year, but this year we are hoping to get a great attendance. This is a program that's sponsored by Crosby's, and it's not a race. It's a test of driving skills, knowledge, powers of observation, memory, and ability to do simple calculations. And participating vehicles were given a departure time and a route, and they get a fun adventure through the county. So you'll learn different things as you drive around the county, and then at the end you get points, and you we have a lot of people who signed up last year who are attending this year as it was canceled, and we hope to have you sign up for that. And you can sign up by calling 716-434-7433. All right, the first thing I wanted to share with you all is a poem. Some of you might be aware that April is National Poetry Month, and so this month I wanted to share a poem that I thought would be appropriate because it's a poem about history, and it's by a writer, a local author named Bob Baxter. He passed away on March 15th, but I wanted to read a poem to honor him. He was a writer, and he was a professor at Niagara County Community College, where he taught English and creative writing. He was highly respected in the community, not only for his writing, but also his environmental activism. He was a founding member of the Niagara Heritage Partnership, a citizens' movement to remove the 6.5-mile portion of the parkway that ran from Niagara Falls to Lewiston. So he really headed up that effort and had the parkway removed. He was born and raised in Niagara Falls, and much of his writing comes from his experience growing up near the falls and living on the edge of its industry. Later in life, he and his wife, Lorraine, spent much of their time on a farm in Ransomville. So the poem I'm going to read is from his book, Niagara Lost and Found, and it is called An Ode to a Photograph of Annie Edson Taylor. This is a photograph. If you all wanted to look at it, I posted it on our website. On our Facebook page this morning. But it's a poem. It's a photograph taken by Orrin Dunlop, and it was taken the day that she decided to take her plunge down Niagara Falls, which was her 63rd birthday on October 24th, 1901. And she did this, if some of our readers probably know, but some may not. She did this during the Pan American Exposition because she thought there'd be a lot of people in town and it would give her the best recognition and audience possible. And she chose to do it on that day. So I would like to, I'm not going to read all the poem, but I'm going to read, because it's a long poem, and I encourage you all to pick up this book and read it yourself sometime and read the rest of his poems, because he was an excellent writer. But I'm going to start off with the second paragraph. The photograph of nine men and Annie is the one. Below the falls on the Canadian side of the river, cascading water in the far background, Annie's the focus of attention. Walking a plank laid between rocks to shore, helped by men who touch or who want to touch the hands offered in congratulation, supplication, to touch a charm. She has no hat here, standing on the plank, hair up in a bun, blouse pulled from the front of her full dark skirt, bent slightly forward at the waist. Below her feet, the water swirls, foaming as thick as oil paint. Some of the men are dressed as if for a sporting event, white collars, a tie, a derby, a casual fedora. Behind her are two men, one with a walrus mustache, has placed both his hand just above her waist, his gaze directed toward the top of the gorge, heavenward. The other's hands rest below her waist, as if to point her in the right direction. To her left, standing on a rock, a man holds her wrist with both hands. Her right arm extends forward, fingertips nearly touching the outstretched hand of the man in the fedora whose eyes are intently on her. Other hands reach out in the air, poised in that fixed moment that ourselves, the people in it. The man with the walrus mustache is Carlisle Graham, who shot the Lower Rapids in a barrel in 1886. The man in the fedora is Red Hills, Sr., riverman, who twice shot the Lower Rapids, who pulled 205 bodies, living and dead, from the Niagara. But Annie's not stylishly dressed here, as were those battle-ready Marines raising the flag on Iwo Jima, but looking all of her 63 years, if not more, befuddled, disheveled, waiting for her feet to take small steps, as if she's being helped home by friends after a night on the town, looking for all the world as if she's just gone over the falls in a barrel. So that is dedicated to our friend Bob Baxter, who passed away on March 15th at age of 84.
He was 84. No kidding. I took a creative writing class from Bob. Yeah. He's a great guy. And he used to come to Newfane and visit the comic book store owner. So we would all sit out in front on the sidewalk and smoke cigarettes and tell stories. It was a great time in life, yes. Very good. Yeah, I love Bob. Okay.
All right.
What is next on our agenda, ladies?
Hi, I'm Michelle Kratz, and I'm a librarian at the Lewiston Public Library, and I'm here to talk about a series of books that the library put together. We had an Italian research group, and over the course of several years, we did several volumes of the Italian history of Niagara Falls. So this this all began, actually, after in 2013, Macri's restaurant, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Macri family, they had an iconic restaurant in Niagara Falls that ended up moving around through the years, but they had, when they were in Lewiston, they did a fundraiser for us. So we thought the best thing to do would be to use the money that they had raised and share some family stories. So that blossomed into 4 volumes, and we also have 3 volumes of photo albums. And all of this was contributed by local people. So it's a great history.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, our first book, Buon Appetito, I'll show you, I know you can't see on the radio, but all of our books are available on Amazon and at the Book Corner in Niagara Falls locally. Buon Appetito started as basically like a culinary history of the Italians of Niagara Falls. You really can't cover the history of Italians without the food. It was so integral to our culture. And I believe, too, as new immigrants come to an area, they're often feared, often hated, a lot of prejudice against people, new people. And particularly that happened to the Italians who came to Niagara Falls. In fact, in our research, I found a lot of articles, or even like little ads in the paper, no Italians or other derogatory words to describe them, allowed to work certain jobs, things like that. But I believe as time went on, it's food and music that actually does bring people together, especially young people who don't have the prejudices of their parents all the time. And when they were going to school together, living in the same neighborhoods, and they were introduced to the Italian culture mainly through food and music. But Buon Appetito focuses on the food. So we did, we had an Italian research group, and there were several of us who, we started mainly with our own families, and then people in the neighborhood. We interviewed a lot of, we tried to find the oldest people we knew who would have, you know, the most knowledge of this type of history. And sadly, I was reviewing all my books last night, and I'm thinking so many people have passed since we started this. And I'm really happy that we did capture so much of, we actually just went right out and interviewed people, went to people's homes. We sat, and of course we had food and wine while we discussed things, but we've got a very personal look at to the beginning of a lot of these businesses. And I feel like it's a very precious history.
Agreed.
And then we went on. We actually, because this was so successful, we never dreamed it would be this successful. And it is self-published. I did everything myself. So I looked through the first book and I'm a little embarrassed, like, oh my gosh. But I did all the editing, all the layout, all of that. Because we didn't have a lot of money, so librarians we all learn how to you know, go on the cheap side here. But I feel the stories are just so important, and we talked about other things, not just the businesses, but traditions such as like the St. Joseph's table, the gathering of cicoria and gardoons, which a lot of our families did. They brought a lot of their traditions from Italy to Niagara Falls. And people wondered what they were doing. It was odd, but it was part of their culture and their family traditions.
Explain some of those traditions.
Well, the cicoria is like, yeah, dandelion greens.
Okay.
And as we have millions and billions of dandelions in this area. But Italians believed it's a very healthful food, and it's cleans your blood. And in fact, it's very true. We all know that greens such as that are very healthy for us. And I remember my family ate things like that. And it's the poor people food, honestly. Yeah. It's what our families ate when there wasn't much else. But it is very healthy. So that was a tradition. A lot of the older people, you'd gather your whole families and you'd go out into the countryside and you'd gather as much of that as you can. And you could make salads with it, or you could like saute it with olive oil and cook it with eggs or pasta or something like that.
Yeah, we used to just boil them and put some salt and butter on them.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It was delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go around in the yard, pick them, cook them, and eat them.
Yeah.
I've eaten many of dandelion green in my day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And other traditions such as making homemade wine. And the more, when this book came out, I had so many people come to the library and say, I have a story. I have this. I have that. And it just opened, I don't want to say can of worms, but it was just this wonderful thing happened where three more books came about, and it's still not over. I'm actually working on a new book that's the history of Niagara, the tellings of Niagara Falls in 50 objects. So if anyone out there has an object, such as some of the things we have at this point, we have a Pizzell iron, an original Pizzell iron from Italy that you'd put over the fire. We have a sausage funnel that was actually made on 19th Street. And you would put the sausage in the funnel, and like it was made for the man's to fit his thumb, actually, so he could push the sausage through. An umbrella handle. How precious is that from Italy that the family had brought to America? And it turns out people have a lot of little pieces like that. So we're doing like a history of that piece itself and the people who brought it here. So, there are a lot of books out right now about like the history of something and so many objects. So we thought we'll stick with 50, but I have a feeling it's going to be multi-volume piece as well.
50 volumes plus 50,
yes. Yes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any memories that you would like to share or would like to join our conversation here with Michelle Kratz is our guest, and Michelle Harris is the executive director for the Niagara County History Center. And, of course, Anne-Marie Lindenberry, still sitting over there. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning. Good morning.
All right, give us a call at 433-1433. That's 433-1433 here on WLVL 1340 AM. Anne-Marie, what you doing over there?
Well, Michelle was talking about the Italians in Niagara Falls, and I have just a little bit of information about the Italian community here in Lockport. I haven't done an extensive amount of research, certainly not as much as Michelle has done, but I've done a little bit of research about the Italian community, particularly the churches that are associated with the Italian community in Lockport. First, for those that aren't familiar with the Italians in Lockport, most of them actually came to Lockport in the early 20th century, particularly around 1910, between 1910 and 1920, to help build what is now referred to as the Erie Barge Canal. Of course, the old locks here in Lockport were dismantled, at least one side of them were. Of course, five of the original are still there. And then the two new large locks were built. And because the Erie Canal is made, at least here in Lockport, part of the Erie Canal is made of stone, there were a lot of stonemasons that were needed. And a lot of stonemasons came from Italy. And so they moved into this area. And the area that they predominantly lived in is what we call now Lower Town. In a lot of the older narratives of Lockport, that area is referred to as East Lockport, and then gradually over time, particularly in the 20th century, it is referred to as Lower Town. In fact, it was interesting. We did a program last year at the museum about the different ethnic groups that contributed to the history of Lockport, and one, of course, was the Italians. And in 1910, the directory for Lockport, for Market Street in Lockport. Market Street is the main street that runs down through Lower Town. And in 1910, there were hardly any people with Italian names living in that area. And by 1920, there was almost, I shouldn't say almost everyone, but the majority of the names along Market Street in Lower Town were Italian. So you can see that the Italians came here between about 1910 and 1920. And one of the first things that they wanted to do was establish a church. And so in 1912, the Diocese of Buffalo sent a young Italian priest to form a new parish in Lower Town. And the church was dedicated to St. Joseph, who was the patron saint of workers. And the first mass was celebrated on Christmas Day in 1912. The church was at Adam and Garden Street. So it's not the St. Joseph's Church that people know today, that's down on Market Street. So this was a predecessor to that church. It was much smaller than what is there now. But by the 1940s, the congregation had grown to over 800 families. And in fact, there was also people of Polish descent were also moving into Lower Town. And so they needed a bigger church. And it was at that point that the St. Joseph's Church that's at Market and Adams Street today was built. And just as an aside to that, on the location of where St. Joseph's is now was the Washington Hunt Law Office, and it was going to be torn down, but the newly founded Niagara County Historical Society, which had just acquired the property on Niagara Street that had belonged to Dr. Samuel Outwater, stepped in, and they actually had the building, the Washington Hunt Law Office, moved to the Niagara Street location and had it restored, and it is still there today. So there's that connection as well. So the new St. Joseph's Church opened in 1956, and thought I had something. There was a priest at the church, and again, I apologize. I'm not Italian, so if I mispronounce any of the Italian names, please forgive me. And I believe his name was Father Cara, C-A-R-R-A. And he was one of the longest serving priests at St. Joseph's. And so in 1975, the Cara Center was built, and that contained offices and classrooms and a chapel. And so that building, I believe, is still there now. Of course, St. Joseph's has closed. That was closed during the kind of the reorganization of the parishes of the diocese in Lockport. Lockport actually lost three of their churches, and two of them were the Italian churches, St. Joseph and St. Anthony's, which I haven't talked about yet. But St. Anthony's was actually formed in 1929, and this was for the Italians that were not living in Lower Town. Not all of the Italians lived in Lower Town, but that's where the major concentration was. But in 1929, St. Anthony's was built on Bristol in Lockport, in fact, not very far from the History Center, and that served 125 families. So St. Joseph's had 800, and St. Anthony's had 125. There was a fire there in 1970, and it had to be rebuilt. But again, St. Joseph's, St. Anthony's, and St. Mary's, which was the German Catholic Church in Lockport, were all closed, and St. Patrick's Church, St. Patrick's and St. John's Church. St. John's is still there and opened and operating, and so is St. Patrick's. But now St. Patrick's is called All Saints because they incorporated four churches that were named after saints: St. Mary's, St. Joseph's, St. Anthony's, and St. Patrick's, and that is now All Saints Church. So I could talk. I don't know. Do we have a commercial break or a call?
Nope, we don't have any calls yet. But callers, you can feel free to join the conversation.
You were looking at him. Share your memories.
You got plenty of time.
Well, there's just one more church that I would like to talk about. Now, when I was growing up, I grew up Irish Catholic, and I knew a lot of Italians, but they were all Catholic, so I always assumed that all Italians were Catholic. And when I came here to Lockport and I was doing research on the Protestant churches of Lockport, I found that there was an Italian Christian church, which actually had started in Chicago in 1907. And it was an outgrowth of the Pentecostal movement, which was taking place among Italian immigrants in the early 20th century. And the missionary effort spread to cities with large immigrant Italian populations, including Niagara Falls and Lockport. In a 1941 article in the Lockport Union Sunday Journal, it related how Reverend, and I know I'm going to massacre this name, and I apologize, Francesco, I got that one, S. D. Giacomo, came to Lockport in 1912 by the invitation of a group of laymen to lead what was then called the Protestant Italian Christian Mission. And it started, it actually started before St. Joseph's. So this is kind of interesting. They both started in the same year, but this one opened first. It was the first Italian church in the city of Lockport. And Reverend D. Giacomo remained pastor for 4 years. And then in 1926, I know I'm jumping ahead here a little bit, the Lockport Italian Christian Church was described in the Union Sun and Journal as a new religious organization. And they purchased the vacant Vine Street School at the corner of Garden Street for their permanent place of worship. The new church, really, there wasn't much in the paper about it. It didn't warrant much attention in the newspaper, except for a small fire in 1930 and a disagreement with the Pope in 1932. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I think I have the actual article here with me. But another major event occurred in 1927 when a national convention of the Italian Pentecostal movement met in Niagara Falls and adopted a uniform set of articles of faith, and they unified in, I'm sorry, but I think this is kind of interesting. They unified into the unorganized Italian Christian Church of the United States. So I just found that a little ironic. So, over the next 20 years, the words unorganized and Italian were dropped from the official name, and the organization was incorporated as the Missionary Society of the Christian Church of North America. However, the Lockport congregation did not drop the name or the word Italian, and they remain known as the Italian Christian Church. They disbanded about 1964. But I actually think that there was a church in Buffalo that many of the Italians from Lockport continued to attend. And then the old schoolhouse on Vine Street, it was subsequently used by other church groups. And then it became the Anjo Club. But now I believe the last I heard, I think it was maybe someplace for yoga or something like that. So that it's being used for something now, but I thought somebody told me that they knew somebody that went there for yoga classes. So, but it's kind of interesting because these are things that, you know, I didn't know much about especially the Italian Christian Church. I knew there was a gentleman that came into the museum on a pretty regular basis years ago that many of you may remember, Nash Barancata, and he was a member of that church. And I also believe he was involved with baseball in some aspect as well. I know. So if anybody has any memories of Lowertown or Nash or any of the churches or anything, if you'd like to call in, we'd love to hear from you.
We sure would. 433-1433. The lines are open. So, Michelle Harris, I'd love just watching you. You can sit here with this big old grin on your face looking over at Michelle and then at Anne-Marie. This is such a new experience for you. It looks like you're having a blast.
I am. And I'm just thinking about, you know, my family and traditions we had. You know, my last name is Harris by marriage, but my maiden name is Petrozulo. And so I'm a third-generation American. But my grandparents lived in Niagara Falls, and we had a lot of different traditions having to do with the Italian side of my family. I was just thinking about my great-grandmother. Her name was Antoinette Catalano, and she actually came. She had some experiences when she was married, and she moved to Ohio, and she was a singer at Chef Boyardee's restaurant. So Chef Boyardee opened a restaurant in Cleveland in 1924, and the Chef Boyardee we know in the canned food is nothing like what Chef Boyardee food was at his restaurant, and his name, interestingly, went on the can is not spelled. It's spelled phonetically, So it's boy R D. and I think it's B-O-A-R-D-I. I think I could be spelling it wrong, but that's it's spelled different in real life. But he opened his restaurant and it kind of evolved into where he was packaging food. So he was one of the first people in the United States to offer fast food, quote unquote, to people. So he had his restaurant, and then he became so successful that he started takeout food, and that kind of evolved into canned food eventually. Okay. And the irony of that is it was very sacrilegious to have anything canned Italian in our household growing up, because everything had to be homemade from scratch. But I always thought that was ironic, since she had worked for Chef Boyardee.
Right.
And so, just thinking about the Italian traditions of food is comfort, food is family, and, you know, there was a lot of tension towards food. I remember my grandmother, she would make homemade raviolis the day of, so I was very spoiled growing up. We never had packaged spaghetti. We always had the homemade sauce and homemade spaghetti if we were going to have an Italian dinner. That's what we had. And it was always interesting also that normally I was thinking that when we have salad before our meals, in our home, we had salad after the meals, because it was thought that when you had an Italian meal, you ate the salad to cleanse your palate, so then you could go on to dessert. So, and Italian meals are very multi-course. I remember during holidays, you would just eat all day. You'd have the antipasto, and you'd have the, breakfast, and by the time you couldn't move by the end of the day because you had so much food.
So. Isn't it wonderful?
And then there was we had a tradition, and I think this is common in Niagara Falls, and it may be common in other places, but we had a lot of Italian Americans have a kitchen in their basement, and they have a place for people to gather in their basements because, the Italian Americans in general had larger families, and they would all gather, particularly ours would gather on Christmas Eve for the Feast of the Seven Fishes, and we would have everyone would come over my grandparents' house into the basement, which was paneled, and we had a fireplace. But we had, our kitchen area was pretty primitive down there, but we would have a stove and a fridge and a sink, and, all of the meal preparation was done in the basement, and then all of the family would gather in the basement for those meals. And so I kind of shared that tradition with my husband, and we now have a primitive kitchen in our basement that we've started for holidays. So
I think that's great. That's right. Keep those traditions alive, because once they're gone, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So it's refreshing to know that people keep these family traditions multi-generational going on and on and on. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. You look like you got something to say there, Michelle.
Yes, I wanted to add something.
Sure.
I don't know if you even remember, Michelle, but you also contributed to our volume 3. Mm-hmm. A lot of our Italian immigrant families served in the military, World War I, World War II. And Michelle's grandfather was one of our special stories in here, if you want to tell a little bit about Michael Petrozzullo, right?
Oh, yes. My grandfather was in the Air Force, during World War II, and his plane actually crashed. He was in India and Burma and Italy, and his plane actually crashed outside of Rome. I can't remember the year, but he survived miraculously. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. But he had written many letters to my grandmother. So, he was born in Schenectady, New York, and he was lived in Niagara Falls, and he was a bricklayer in Niagara Falls. And he just happened to, if you go to Niagara Falls, to Goat Island, there's the arch from the Adams plant there, and he helped move that arch onto Goat Island. So the statue of Tesla used to be near that arch, and now they moved him over to the brink. But anyway, he was a bricklayer in Niagara Falls, and he had written several hundred letters to my grandmother while they were dating, and then they got married. They eloped down in Columbia, South Carolina. So she traveled from Niagara Falls and to him down in Columbia before he went overseas, and they eloped down there. So, which was interesting, because I used to live down in North Carolina, and we would pass Columbia, and that was a little link I had to the history of my grandfather and my grandparents. But yes, he was in World War II, and he actually inspired me to do a project called Letters Home, A History of War Through Letters, that I work on. But But just writing letters, you know, to my grandmother, and you know, they were always so close when I was growing up. You know, they did everything together, and you know, her name was Beatrice Petrozulo. But it was funny, they had been married so long that, you know, she would tell him something, and his response was always, "Yes, B." You know, so you could tell who wore the pants in that family.
Two words for a successful marriage. The first one is yes. The second one is dear. Or me. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us late, you still have 14 minutes to call in and share your memories of the history of past. If you have Italian descent, maybe, or not even Italian descent, doesn't matter. You can tell us about your childhood, your family traditions, the memories that you would like to share and maybe prolong, and we can preserve them by giving us a call at 433-1433. What do you think about that, Emery?
Well, I just realized I also had some information. There was a couple of grocery stores down in Lower Town, and the History Center actually has some photographs of some of these stores and also some of the people that operated the stores. And one of them was Butera's grocery store, which was at 286 Chapel Street. And we have a photograph with Mary Tamino Butera. And it's a very nice photograph. It looks like she's got her apron on, and she's all ready to help you in her grocery store. And we also have, there was another store also operated by the Tamino family, and that was at Clinton Street at the corner of Mill Street. And both of these photographs are from about 1940. And so if anybody, you know, is interested, we do have these photographs. Sorry about that.
Okay.
But we were saying earlier that in most cities, there were all of these little tiny grocery stores, and they were operated by families. And I grew up in Buffalo, but I know they had them in Lockport and in Niagara Falls. So if anybody's family operated one of those grocery stores, or if you have any memories, I could talk about them in South Buffalo, but the program is not about South Buffalo. But if you have any memories of any of these places in Lockport or Niagara Falls, you know, please let us know. I don't know if Michelle, you know, when you were doing your research, that people did talked about any of the little grocery stores there.
Oh yes. And we talked a lot about a lot of the Italians that came here were trying to find ingredients and things to cook how they did at home. So the gardens were a big thing. I mean, for most people at that time, people had their victory gardens or they canned and took care of that type of thing. But Latina's is a very popular store that still exists today in Niagara Falls with an Italian import company. And we traced the history of that, which was actually founded by Greeks in Niagara Falls and then came into an Italian family. So that was kind of interesting to us. But similar type olive oil, Mediterranean type foods are important. Or a lot of the family's family members, when they would arrive here, would bring things with them. Cheeses and sausages and olive oil, or they would send it here at different times. We had a lot of stories about that. In fact, my cousin, who they arrived here after the war in the 1950s. When they arrived in America, they brought the cheeses and sausages, and everything was confiscated. I was just talking to him about, he was a little boy at the time, and he said, "All of that work we did," and then he's like, "These customs people, they must have had a wonderful feast." But at that time, at later years, you weren't allowed to bring those type of things. But food seems to be the center of most of the stories that we covered in grocery stores. I just opened to a grocery store. There were so many grocery stores. Cucina's, like every corner had something. But I think a lot of it, too, were because my grandfather had a restaurant. It's Fortuna's is still in Niagara Falls, family run. He always felt, he said, if we have a restaurant or a grocery store, things like that, we're always going to have food. because most of the immigrant people were from very poverty-stricken areas of Italy or came from war, and they were afraid here. They didn't have a lot. So food was the most important thing.
Absolutely. You got a full belly, you can be okay.
That's right.
Well, we had a caller, but they only called for like 2 seconds. So if you wanted to call, call back, caller.
Yeah, please call back.
433-1433. I know, it's funny you talk about the Italians on the lower town. I have some friends that were over there, and, you know, Hector and Dorothy Galante, you know, she would cook. Oh, my gosh, she would cook for us. It was just wonderful because they were, you know, old from the old country. And that was wonderful, wonderful food, wonderful times. And so to have the memories, again, focused around the table. You know, you sit at the table. Yeah. Didn't have iPhones or pad tablets or anything like that. You just actually looked at people in the eye and conversed with them, and it was a different time. No question about that.
Our books are also filled with recipes.
Really?
Yes, hey. Recipes.
Oh, there's our caller. Let's try it again. Okay. Good morning, caller. You are on WLVL with the Niagara County History Center. What's your thought or comments?
Well, good morning. You were talking about the stores in Lockport, and especially down in Lower Town. Another big one was Scapoletti's, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And then... one that I worked for was Chivetti's, which was at the corner of Market Street and Vine.
Okay.
And I started working there in 1967, and at that time it was the largest of the grocery stores in Lower Town, and it was run by the Chivetti family, Mrs. Chivetti, her son Tony, and her brother Buck used to be one of the butchers there. And I can't remember the other butcher's name, but his first name was Joe, and he was quite well known around that area. And my most important memory of that is every Saturday morning I had to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning because Joe the butcher would make up 300 pounds of Italian sausage, and I had to stuff it into casings by hand using a hand grinder. And I know that everyone in that area, they would line up in the morning to get their Italian sausage for their for the weekend. And it usually sold out all 300 pounds by the end of the day.
Wow.
Isn't that something? Is this Jim?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought, yeah. Jim here. Yep. What a great memory.
It was a really large, store for being, you know, a family-operated grocery store, which a lot of, you know, the stores at that time were just corner stores and smaller places,
right?
But this one was rather large, and it was in business for quite a few years after I worked there. But now I think it's an optician store at the corner of the market and Vine.
Okay, I don't recall seeing any photographs of that at the History Center, so you don't happen to have any photos, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It was also it was Chivetti's, but it was also called Foodland.
Okay.
And, there was another large Italian store operated on West Avenue, which was also called Foodland.
Okay.
But now, that is now the Pet Plus.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay, yeah. Okay, I know where that is. Yeah. But if anybody has any photographs of any stores in Lockport, particularly these small, you know, grocery stores, we can scan them. We'd love to have copies of them. We can scan them. You don't even have to give them up. So... but
there,
we like
there
to
should be out should be yeah. some out there for Chivetti's.
Yeah,
it was there for quite a long time.
So, well, thank you very much for calling in.
All right,
thank
Jim.
You.
All right, so Dorothy, we said hi.
Ah.
New phone system. There we go. Well, anybody else want to call in? You still got about four minutes. So maybe Michelle Harris, we should give it back to you and let you do a recap and a final thought.
Okay, yeah, I was just thinking, you know, the tradition moves on because we have a lot of people from this area that move away to other places in the country. And I know from seeing people on social media and talking to my friends that when people move away, the first thing they want to do when they come visit home is go to the restaurants that they love and gather the groceries that they can bring back to their their new homes, and a lot of that has to do with the unique foods that we have here in Western New York. I have a funny story about my dad. He lives in Albany, and one time he had to tell me to come and bring him some DiCamillo's bread from DiCamillo's Bakery and some cheese, some Fontanella cheese from Latina's. And so I packed that in my car along with my dogs. And so we drove 5 hours to Albany, and while we were at a restaurant, my rest stop, my dog Arwin had decided to explore our trunk and start eating the cheese. Oh, no. So when I came back into the car, the cheese was half gone. I said, oh gosh, my dad's going to be so disappointed when we get there. But when we got there, my dad said, you know, I can just cut around what Arwin had eaten. That cheese was so special to him. So that just shows how, you know, people love the food from their areas. Yeah. But so that was my final story. Anne-Marie, did you want to mention anything that's coming up at the History Center?
Well, we're having our children's programs in July and August. I know this is a little early to talk about that, but if anybody, you know, wants to start thinking on Wednesdays in July and August from 10 to 3, we are going to have programs open for children 7 to 11 years old. We have a couple of different topics that we're going to be exploring, and we do a lot of activities. We do games. We make crafts. We have stories. We do things outside. We take short walks around the neighborhood. So it's a lot of fun. And so, you know, keep that in mind if you have children or grandchildren and you're looking for something for them to do. Our phone number is 716-434-7433. They will be on our website very shortly. Our website is niagarahistory.org. So you can check them out there as well.
Very good. All right, we got about 30 seconds. Final thoughts, Michelle or Michelle?
I just want to thank you for having me on the program today. And if anyone out there has any stories they'd like to share, you can always come to me at the Lewiston Public Library. Just call the library or stop in, and I'd love to hear your stories and share them.
Very good. And Michelle.
Well, thank you all. Thank you all.
Thanks a lot.
It was a very very informative program today. And as the listeners get to know you, they're going to feel more comfortable and call in. And before you know it, we're going to have so many calls, we won't even know what to do with them all.
We hope.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot,
Eric.
All right. Okay. You take care. Okay. All right. You've been listening to the great here on WLVL. And, of course, if you missed any of this program, you can always go to WLVL.com. Pick on the podcast link, and you can re-listen to it. It'll be loaded on there later this afternoon. So stay tuned for Fox News, local news, and don't forget the baseball game at 12:10 here exclusively on WLVL, 1340 AM, streaming worldwide at WLVL.com.